72HourPrint.com is the official print partner of PewterReport.com. For printing signage and apparel needs, contact our partners at 888-72-HR-PRINT or 72HourPrint.com. That's 72HRPrint.com.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me, just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue.
The Pewter Nation podcast is presented by West Shore Financial, the official financial sponsors of PewterReport.com. For life insurance, investment, and retirement strategies, West Shore Financial's Chris Garrido can help you plan for the future and protect your family's finances. Call Chris at 813-434-0037 for a free, no-obligation conversation today. And now, get ready for the new Pewter Nation podcast.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Bucks Pewter Nation podcast. Mark Cook is not here, so I am your host, Matt Matera, and as always, I am joined by my other wonder twin, even though we are not twins and not the same age, Taylor Jenkins.
We're close enough.
And the man that runs this whole website, without him, we wouldn't really be here, other than
true
our moms and dads, Mr. Scott Reynolds.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that we had some feedback from the last Pewter Nation podcast, and we've decided to suspend Mark Cook for a week.
Yeah, a big decision, but yeah. I think we would both agree it had to be done.
And that's on top of the physical punishments that he was given.
Well, yeah, and also it's
for my ears, especially when I edit this, my ears, I know. By the end of it.
Whew. We have to get you some cotton swabs for the bleeding that occurs. Right. But no, Captain Interruption was just a little too overboard last week with the whole Andy thing. And so we decided to suspend Mark for a week without pay. Now, he doesn't know this yet because he's not here. But, I figure he'll be listening to the podcast later today and he'll get the news.
It'll definitely be an interesting listen for Mark tonight.
Yeah, it'll be a little happy weekend for you there, Mark.
A little breaking news.
You know? Yeah, some breaking news. Exactly. Yeah. Here's some other breaking news. Guess what, guys? I was negligent about my finances. I'm going to admit it. Now, you know by now, if you're a regular listener to the Pewter Nation podcast, that this is presented by our great friend Chris Garrido at West Shore Financial. That's the official financial sponsor of PewterReport.com, and I'll admit it. I was that guy. That guy who thought he had enough life insurance. That guy who didn't nearly put enough money away for my retirement. Guys, I procrastinated. Don't be like me. Call Chris Garrido and let his team at West Shore Financial come up with a sound strategy to protect you and your family's future. Chris told me it's never too late to bolster my retirement, my life insurance, and he's right. So if you're like me, if you've put this off, Chris will put you on the path to sound investment and retirement strategies, but don't wait any longer. Don't do it. I've known Chris for over a decade, and I was a client of his at West Shore Financial before he became a sponsor of this Pewter Nation podcast. I trust him with my retirement. Call Chris Garrido today at 813-434-0037 for a complimentary, no obligation, preliminary conversation, and you'll be glad that you did.
Yeah, thanks to Chris for being a sponsor. You always got to plan ahead for the future, as the Bucks have been doing. You know, they planned ahead last week after they released Gerald McCoy by now signing Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, got to meet him today.
Yeah, Suh was in France recently, but he was in the facilities today.
Yep.
For his introductory press conference. So, guys, the floor is open. What were your thoughts and, you know, your analysis of Ndamukong Suh, first time in the red and pewter?
Well, he's taken number 93, and that's going to piss off a lot of Gerald McCoy lovers. And to that, I really don't give a shit.
Yeah. What's the big deal?
It shouldn't be a big deal. It shouldn't. There are some holy sacred numbers for this franchise. And three of them have been... I guess the team, I think, has only officially retired a couple, but there are some numbers that are off limits that they're not going to get.
You don't see
anymore.
Devin White taking 40.
Correct.
40 is different.
40.
If you're already in the Ring of Honor, shouldn't they just retire your number anyway?
I think
like,
so.
Why is there this weird loophole that technically you can still wear that number?
It's weird that your number is up on the stadium. And I mean, in a baseball, what do they do in baseball? You put the jerseys up on the stadium. So if you're going to put the name and number up on your stadium, why would it not be just officially retired? Because you don't want somebody on the field while the number is sitting above the club section with their name.
Yeah, but here's the nuts and bolts of it. 63, Leroy Salmon. 99, Warren Sapp. 55, Derek Brooks. 40, Mike Alstott. 20, Rondé Barber. 47, John Lynch. Those are the numbers that are off limits. And listen, there have been a couple great Buccaneer players, players that I think will eventually be inducted into the Hall of Fame, that their numbers were given out like the minute they were gone. Hardy Nickerson, 56. Mm-hmm. And Simeon Rice, 97. Jimmy Wilkerson was wearing 97 the next year after Simeon was gone. And Simeon Rice has done a hell of a lot more for the Buccaneers in terms of breaking records, taking this team to the playoffs, winning a Super Bowl, showing up in the fourth quarter of games and making huge plays than Gerald McCoy did.
We had a PR roundtable maybe about a month ago saying who should be next into the Bucs Ring of Honor after Rondé Barber, and Simeon Rice was a high candidate for that.
I tell you what, I was at the Mike Alstott Family Foundation charity dinner last night. And I've been advocating for a couple guys. I've been a longtime proponent of Hardy Nickerson getting in. I've been a longtime proponent for Simeon Rice getting in. Kind of blazed the trail a little bit for James Wilder to get in, and also Monty Kiffin. Because I think Monty Kiffin, who has won more games in Tampa Bay than any other Buccaneer coach, not head coach, he was never head coach, but he's won more games than any other coach in Bucs history because he's been in both regimes, the Dungy regime and the Gruden regime, and the architect of the Tampa 2. You look at that Ring of Honor, Brooks and Sapp are
he's
in there.
He's responsible for so much.
Absolutely. And Barber and Lynch.
I believe the Dallas Cowboys to this day, I think, still run Tampa, or just recently started to move out of it, but still ran a Tampa 2 defense. I mean, it kind of spread, and it became one of the kind of cornerstone defenses in the NFL.
It was the defense. And certainly when you look at when Herm Edwards became a head coach with the Jets, when Rod Marinelli became a coach with the Lions, when Lovie Smith became the coach with the Bears, you know, they took the Tampa 2 style with them.
And it was kind of something I think that now we're seeing such a shift to a nickel defense, and you need so much speed and you need so much athleticism on the field. And that was kind of that middle ground back between, because you can't run up just a base 4-3 and a base 3-4 like you used to. And I think that Tampa 2 defense was something that brought in like a Rondé Barber, who's an ultra-athletic slot or nickel corner. And you bring in those highly athletic linebackers to try and kind of grow with the league as it started to move to a more pass-heavy league where you had to find something in between kind of a base defense and a base nickel.
The two things that killed the Tampa 2 as an every-down defense were, number one, the quick passing game. The three-step drop, the smoke routes, the wide receiver screens. When you're rushing four, and that's the game plan, the quarterbacks just get rid of the ball just too quickly now. You have to have blitzing from linebackers and safeties, guys that can get there now to put pressure on there. And I think that's why you see the Bucs go to a 3-4 defense. Some of these stalwart playoff teams, the Patriots have been a 3-4, 4-3 hybrid. You look at Baltimore, they run a 3-4 under. The Rams
Steelers
run
have been
a
3-4
under.
Steelers. Attacking 3-4 for as long as
the Titans. Yeah, so I think that the Buccaneers are now kind of jumping on that trend. But the other thing that killed the Tampa 2 as an every-down defense was when they made the rule changes and you took away the enforcer strong safety type, like John Lynch, where you could just bash the hell out of wide receivers and tight ends come across the middle.
There's not that intimidation factor anymore. Like Cam Chancellor, I think you could argue, is probably one of the last safeties.
Yes, agreed. And he
just retired not too long ago. He was one of the last safeties in whatever you want to call it, you know, the quote-unquote modern era football that could really make a name for himself still being a heavy hitter.
Right.
But, you know, in this new time. But, you're absolutely right.
One of the fatal flaws with Mark Dominic and Greg Schiano was signing Deshaun Goldson and drafting Mark Barron.
I was going to say, Mark Barron was just
who were those type of guys.
Out. And they immediately took his career out from the league.
Yes.
He could be took away the kind of suspended. Player he could be.
Barron was on the Rams last year, right?
As a linebacker?
Yeah, he stayed in the league for a while with the Rams.
So, but I get back to last night, and I saw Monty Kiffin there. A lot of former Buccaneer players were there. Obviously, Mike Alstott at his event. Riedel Anthony, Ernest Graham was there. Martin Grammatica.
Jameis was there.
Jameis was there, current Buccaneer. Bruce Arians was there, spoke with him for a little bit. Anthony Becht, Jason Minecki, you know, a lot of older Buccaneers. Brad Johnson showed up, which was great to see the Bull. But Monty Kiffin was there. And, boy, he's really aged.
Posted, yeah. You and Kiffin.
Yeah, he's 79 years old. And a lot of running out there on the football field has really taken its toll on his hips, on his back. I mean, he looks old. I mean, he's 79. And I'll tell you what, when he was in his 60s running around, he was a spry 65-year-old, however old he was, 60, whatever he was. But, man, the age has really caught up with him. And so I put it in today's SR's Fab 5, in my last little segment in there, in section five, the Glaziers, if you have any interest in putting this guy in the Bucks Ring of Honor, do it like in 2020. Like, move him ahead of maybe some more deserving players that have kind of left their mark on the Bucks, just because
the clock's running out, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, they had to obviously put their father in, Malcolm Glazier, in posthumously, because he passed away. And Leroy Selman died at 56, a couple years after he was put in there from a catastrophic stroke. So you never know when you're going to go, right? But at the same time, I mean, I'd put the odds more on Monty Kiffin going before Hardy Nickerson or Simeon Rice or James Wilder. So I just would hope that the Glaziers get the message. I think the guy totally deserves to be in the Ring of Honor. He's probably the only assistant coach you're going to put in franchise history,
in
terms 100%. Of a pure assistant. But for winning as many games as he did with John Gruden and Tony Dungy before that, he's got to go in.
You don't have many assistant coaches that not only revolutionize an entire franchise, but revolutionize kind of a defensive style across the league.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a defensive coordinator who won a lot of games. He was you talk about the West Coast offense was something that revolutionized the league. The Tampa, too, is up there on the other side of the ball. I mean, not quite. But it's up there.
I mean, it's in every Madden video game.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. And the interesting thing is some people might argue, well, you know, it was really Tony Dungy's defense. Okay, well, to a degree it was.
To a degree.
Dungy brought the system, and then Kiffin perfected it. And it should be noted, too, that as much success as the Bucs defense had in 97, in 99, certainly against the Rams in that NFC Championship game, they were never a number one defense until 2002, after Dungy was gone. And I think they were number one again in 2004, 2005. So the Bucs have only achieved, I think, the number one ranked defense three times. It happened in 79 and then happened twice with Kiffin at the helm. But those were both of those years under the Gruden regime, not the Dungy regime.
You know what's funny is I was literally last week, I was watching YouTube video of the 2002 Bucks that won the Super Bowl. And, you know, it went through every single game.
Yeah.
Derrick Brooks had a pick six. It felt like every single game.
All the time.
It was crazy.
All the time.
You would never see that with a linebacker today.
Yeah.
It's very rare, but every single game, Derrick Brooks, touchdown. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Devin White.
Devin White could be next.
Yeah.
Four speed.
Something about that middle linebacker with the first name with the letter D that brings out the best.
The interesting thing is today was kind of screwy, right, because we got to go out to the indoor practice facility, and which was nice. Nice little treat for us on Friday.
Nice
have
to be in the AC.
Have to sweat our asses off.
That was the first OTA that we can go to on a Friday. I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's been Tuesday every time, and now
exactly.
Switch over to Friday.
And so this was the last OTA, which means everything's going to change next week. For the minicamp. Actually, no, it's not. It's going to be the exact same thing.
A little earlier.
Just mandatory.
Just mandatory, and it's going to be a little earlier. Exactly. So, and it's 3 days we get to watch them, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So we get to go out there and watch a little bit, and basically just kind of special teams.
Yeah.
Defensive line wasn't really out there a lot today. I think Bo Allen was out there. Maybe he was the only one.
Him and Terry Beckner Jr. And
yeah.
Coach Arian said after that he gave most of the defensive line the day off to go golfing. I don't know why specifically golfing. I know Mike Evans has a golf charity coming up, sometime
in June.
Got to get the big boys prepped. Got to get them out on the course and get ready, get their short game ready.
So he said that played into Adama Sue coming into the building as well, because he's like, you don't need to get up early anymore. I know the defensive linemen are here.
Right.
So you don't need to really practice today if no one else is here. But he did confirm that he'll be practicing all of next week.
Yep. And so we got to see a little bit of that. Then we got called in to the Sue press conference.
Right.
And then actually, by the time we were done with that, he ended up calling practice early anyways by about an hour.
Yeah, Coach Arians. So out of Peter Report, you guys were working on stories and
yep.
everything.
Yeah, I spent
after,
about more time walking across the field than I did watching the team.
After Sue's press conference was done. So I went out to practice and actually got to see a little of the drills that went on. It was a lot of goal line stuff and things like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of practice, what they did was...
And we're saying goal line with no pads.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it was all passing.
Yeah, I mean, Pewter Nation listeners out there right now, goal line. No. This is like patty cake, offensive line, defensive
with
line,
no
touching.
Defensive line except Bo Allen
yeah.
and Terry Beckner Jr.
Yeah.
So, they did one. You see it all the time on Hard Knocks and things like that. Like, if the big defensive lineman can make this catch, then practice ends earlier. If the kicker can make this kick. So they had Matt Gay. Interesting. They went with Matt Gay and Jairo Santos.
Yeah.
Matt Gay hit his first pressure cooker of a field goal in Bucks history.
Okay.
He was about 50 yards out, I'd say. He hit the field goal, and practice was done. All the players, they went crazy as soon as he hit it and everything like that. But Bruce Arians was saying after practice in his press conference that he didn't even want to have practice today, but he just felt there was a couple of different things, and he didn't really go into specifics because coaches never want to give away their game plan.
Sure.
He went into he pretty much said that there was just a couple of things that he wasn't comfortable
with. Just wanted to see it on field.
He wants to see it go again.
Yeah.
But overall, he said he's happy with the development of this team. He's really enjoying the culture that this team is building.
Yeah.
And I asked him myself, too. I said, I know there's not pads on yet, but how do you feel about the aggressiveness of this team?
Mm-hmm.
And he said he really, really likes it right now, and he thinks it's going to transition over easily when you get to training camp in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we had the good fortune to be at the Bucks Luxury Suite Poker Tournament the other night, and at our table was Corey Nelson, one of the reserve linebackers for the Bucks. Got a chance to talk to him. There's a lot of there's some marquee players there. Levante David, Ali Marpet, Donovan Smith.
OJ was there.
OJ Howard, Ryan Jensen.
Yes.
And then of course Shaq Barrett was also there. Then you had some sprinkled in some reserves.
He was look at Blessy, by the way. He was like the last guy to stay.
Yeah.
He really likes that.
Him and Fairway Green. He was there for a while playing blackjack.
Yep. But we were talking with Corey Nelson. We just said you got to like this game, right? As a linebacker, to be able to blitz this much, and I mean, every linebacker I've talked to said this is just, if you're a linebacker, this is the dream defense to play in because the pressure can come from anywhere: inside, A gap, B gap, outside, C, D gap. That it's just so much fun to play in. You're dropping in coverage one play, you're blitzing the next. There's so much versatility. It never gets stale. It's always fun playing in Todd Bowles' scheme.
And that's really where it all starts at the top, is your mentality. Everything is going to be set from the top down, and that's why I've steadfastly said that, I mean, granted, again, I will repeat this, maybe I am putting way too much faith in Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles. I've been a fan of them since they were winning awards with the Cardinals, since they were coordinators elsewhere. But it all starts at the top, and if you go back to Ndamukong Suh's press conference, you look at the second question he was asked was, what's the appeal of coming to Tampa Bay, playing in this on this team and playing in Todd Bowles' system? And he said, I think the biggest thing was, you said it right there, Todd Bowles. Not only do I have confidence...
You know whose question that was?
Whose was it?
That's my question.
I know.
Yeah.
There you go.
I had to interrupt you just because Mark isn't here. I just
right.
felt
someone
needs to be the interrupter.
Just a little bit, so that's what's great is you look at, and not only does Bruce Arians bring, I think, a very good offense to this team.
I don't want
to
get
not
suspended.
Not only does Todd Bowles,
so I'm not going to interrupt anymore.
Bring a very good defensive
scheme, so.
But players want to come and play for them.
Yeah.
It's like recruiting. They not only bring a phenomenal scheme, players want to come play for them as people. Players want to come play in their schemes because they have a history of not only putting winners on the field, developing players into winners.
Yeah.
They know exactly what they want. It's very clear-cut what they're going to run, what they want out of that defense and offense. And they have just the mentality of, we're going to take players we need, put them in positions we want them, we have the mentality we want, and everything's just very clear-cut.
And Stu, this is kind of interesting to really put in perspective. When you think about it, football is a kid's sport, right? You could pay the king's ransom to play a kid's sport.
Mm-hmm.
I've coached my son and Pop Warner for 6-7 years, and there really isn't a whole bunch in terms of difference from that level to high school to college and the pro. I mean, obviously it's more complex. You have better athletes, blah, blah, blah. But the game is still the same, like whatever level you play. And it really boils down to having fun. And winning is ultimately what makes football fun, is when you can crush a team's soul and you know,
winning isn't everything, it's the only thing.
Right, yeah. And it's better like when you crush a team's soul, whether you get the game-winning touchdown or you just blow them out of the water. It's fun to like
It's fun to talk
like
trash
that.
To. Like, if, stop it. These players have families.
If you've ever played on a team where you win, you'll find out that having fun, just being there, is fun. Having fun winning is a blast.
Exactly.
Nothing is more fun in sports than winning. It doesn't matter if you're how fun your practice is, how much you like your coach, how much you like the people around you.
And
when
you win, you
have a blast.
And that's when the extracurricular stuff comes up. Like the Chicago Bears, they had something called Club Dub, and is you know after they won a game, they you know
have their little
put, like, strobe lights on and stuff. And that only comes with the winning.
Exactly. But the other thing is, and this goes into chasing those wins, is you got to have fun in what you're doing. And I tell you right now, there's a lot of players, I'm not going to name names, but I've talked to off the record, that just simply didn't have fun over the last couple of years. Mike Smith's defense was boring as hell. It was boring to watch. This team got abused on the field. They were asked to do things that weren't their strengths, and they weren't having any fun.
How could you? You let up a touchdown every freaking
You can
down.
Like Mike Smith, and you can like Dirk Cutter, but I don't think guys were necessarily having fun
in
those systems.
I think in the offensive side of the ball, they were. With Todd Monken and Dirk Cutter, it was a fun offense to play.
At the same time, I don't think anybody was going to put their neck on the line for Dirk Cutter. I think there are people on this all over this team that will put their neck on the line for these two coordinators and all the assistant coordinators that come in with it.
Yeah, I mean, you hope that's the case. And so far, so good. We'll see. I mean, I'm taking the show-me state mentality,
the
Missouri approach. Yeah, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, I walked and talked off the field today with Noah Spence, and I said, hey, the last time I saw you standing up rushing the passer was at the Senior Bowl back in 2016, where you were one of the most dominant players coming out of Eastern Kentucky, and you were a high second-round draft pick because you had a phenomenal Senior Bowl. And he looked at me, he's like, man, he's like, this is like the good old days of me standing up and rushing, and I'm so much more comfortable doing that than having to bang heads against a 330-pound offensive tackle down in and down out, playing at 237 my rookie year, or even 250 last year. And now I've got so much more space to operate in. There's more things I can do. I just feel more comfortable. Now, I'm not about to start the Noah Spence hype train. I've been that conductor for a little bit.
I've been riding.
Okay, I'm not the conductor. When Noah Spence gets his next sack, if he does get one this year in Tampa Bay, I'll say, "Attaboy, good job, Noah." You know, it's about time, right? But we'll wait and see. I'm not gonna sit there and tout this guy's horn and he's gonna be a double digit sacker. If he is, he is. If he's not, he's not. But I do think that when you look at what he's going to be asked to do in this scheme, it's more akin to what he did in college that made him a second-round pick and made him start at the Senior Bowl. When you look at Carlton Davis, how he was asked to play at Auburn and Vernon Hargraves was asked to play at Florida, it's more akin to what they're doing now than anything they did under Mike Smith in his awful, wretched defenses. And so
there's that
little bit of silver lining, that little bit of glimmer of hope.
These players are professionals. They're not. They know when they go, I'm not being used right.
Yeah.
And that definitely, not only are they
at a natural disadvantage,
but that's mentally, you're going, this is not what I'm good at, and I'm not being used correctly. So not only are you trying to catch up and do something that you're not necessarily comfortable with, but you know you're not at your best or in position.
How about friggin' Justin Evans being brainwashed, you know?
Oh my
Don't
God.
Give up the big play. Don't give up the big play. Get back. They're at the 50-yard line. Get on the goal line.
I'm sorry, you've attacked
it's 50
the last
yards
eight years
away from
career?
The ball. You know, it's just ridiculous. And so, yes, you see these players having fun. Like, you can genuinely see it. Like, I'm telling you. I mean, yes, it's off the field, but the camaraderie, especially with there was more defensive players at the poker tournament, right? And you could just see even some of these new guys that they really weren't even subjected to. Mike Smith's defense, you know, these new linebackers.
To the horrors,
They're just having a blast. This is fun. And And guess what? You don't have to play friggin' music to have fun. Like
exactly.
Just get after the friggin' quarterback. And that's what they're doing.
You have to change something from being 5-11 over the past 2 years.
Yes.
Whether it's changing the music, getting a new defensive lineman, and
yeah.
getting rid of a defensive lineman that's been there for a while.
Right.
Something has got to change, and slowly but hopefully surely,
yeah.
we're seeing those wheels in motion to turn this into a winning team.
You're right, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, and with all this discussion of you know players having fun, getting back to having fun, you know what else is really fun to do?
Firing off flare guns.
You're damn right about yep. that.
Now listen, I gotta tell myself here. I made a challenge. To Mark Cook.
You did.
In May, I said, you need to talk to Chris Garrido at West Shore Financial, and I need to go to T.A. Mahoney's. And today is May 31st.
Last day.
I know.
You still got today, though.
I don't have time. I got a packed afternoon. I cannot make it to T.A. Mahoney's. But
oh no,
we're going to tape a podcast next June, which is like literally, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
We're not taping it tomorrow.
Like June of 2020?
No, I mean next month, like June. Right. June, we'll probably do one, I would think, Tuesday after the first minicamp. We'll probably do one Thursday after. We'll give Pewter Nation a doubleheader.
We'll let you guys know, yeah.
Yeah. I will not appear on this podcast again until I have gone to T.A. Mahoney's.
Oh, no.
And we're pretty much running this thing, Tanner.
Better go quick, or me and Matt are going to take over.
I know.
It's the
which
young
means
bloods.
I've got Monday and Tuesday before the podcast to go. So I guess it means Monday, really. I'm going to T.A. Mahoney's. What are some things I could find at T.A. Mahoney's, guys?
Well, you can find some brand new T-shirts. I saw they were advertising on
yep.
Twitter.
Hats as well. Anything for bait and tackle.
Yep.
Anything for boat repair. It's all at T.A. Mahoney's, 50th and Adamo.
We've got hooks, we've got buoys, we've got nets, we've got probably fishing poles. They've got pretty much everything you could need if you were going to be on and or near the water.
Right.
And living in Florida, you are literally always on or near the water.
I'm at the beach all the time.
All the time.
I see people on their boats. I'm like, damn, eventually one day if I can buy
swim.
A boat, I'm going to T.A. Mahoney's to get everything I need.
Yeah.
I wear 6 life preservers because I can't swim.
You can't swim?
I can't swim.
You need some swimming lessons.
I'm a sinker.
It's not that hard.
I'm a sinker.
You're a sinker.
I had to go in there and buy half of their stock.
Well, your name's not Bob, apparently.
So. Oh, no.
But listen, whether it's nautical gear, marine gear, flare guns, get it at T.A. Mahoney. You can also check them out online at?
T.A.Mahoney's.com? .com.
There we go.
Sorry, right. I zoned out for
Loft
a second.
Off guard.
Yep. Okay. So Ndamukong Suh, he wants to wear number 93. He's going to be a charitable guy. I've got an article up on PewterReport.com. Some of my takeaways from his press conference. I'm not going to reel them off here, but definitely check that out. I was impressed by what he had to say. He's a very matter of fact kind of guy. And I thought that one of the things that you had said that Bruce Arians mentioned in his post practice interview was that. Sue's not coming here to really change the culture. The culture's already been changed. He's coming to just fit in with this
yes,
culture.
Yes, it was that aggressive mentality. Everyone's like, oh, you know, Ndamukong Suh, he's going to bring that. He's going to bring that aggression, that, you know, balancing the line of going overboard with, you know, being physical and hitting another player.
Yeah.
And not exactly those words, I'm paraphrasing, but Bruce Arians is like, yeah, we already have that aggressiveness. Suh is just another player that's going to fit into that right away. And
yeah.
that, again, pretty much goes to the buzzword of changing the culture. This is what the team wants. And, yeah, Sue's just going to bring right into that.
Yeah, and I think, too, I spent a lot of today's, if you're listening, today means Friday. We're taping this Friday after the last OTA. I spent a lot of time in this week's SR's Fab 5 talking about Bruce Arians, his offense, getting into his mind a little bit. From what I was able to glean from reading his very interesting autobiography, The Quarterback Whisperer. And I did spend 3 parts of the Fab today talking about that, and I'm not getting any royalties or commissions from any sales of his books, but I do recommend it. And I just thought it was a very interesting read. I'd read it back in January after he became the head coach, took a lot of notes, just kind of felt this was the time to spring it on our readers. And there's a lot of interesting stuff about how he formulates game plans. He scripts the first 30 plays, not just the first 15, 30 plays, and he wants balance. So within that first 30, you're going to have 15 runs and 15 passes. And he has his quarterback choose the 15 pass plays. He wants Jameis Winston to pick the pass plays for the first 15. So he's going to say, this is what we did at practice. You pick the 15 you're most comfortable with. And one of the interesting things that I think Bruce tries to instill in his quarterback, that no risk it, no biscuit mentality, is, hey, if you want the first pass play to be a deep shot, like, we're going for it. He hates when TV announcers say, well, you want to get a quarterback into rhythm with a screen pass, with a check down to a running back. So it's an easy completion to get the accuracy going. Bruce is like, no, if the most comfortable plays that our quarterback has run in practice that week are 15-yard outs or, you know, bootleg, deep posts, then that's what's going to be in the first 15 plays. And he loves the whole shock and awe approach. He loves to come out with a big shot.
They punch him in the mouth.
Yeah. And
come
that's
out quick.
And I think Jameis is really the perfect quarterback when you look at the ideal things that Bruce spoke about and wrote about in the Quarterback Whisperer book. Those are the ingredients that Jameis Winston really has. And you could kind of see from looking at this, what I call a football textbook, really, when you look at the Quarterback Whisperer and the ingredients that he wants in a quarterback and what Jameis Winston has to offer up in terms of the intelligence, the grit, the heart, the mobility, leadership, all those types of things, it really is one more star that has aligned for Bruce Arians to get him out of retirement. It wasn't just Todd Bowles and getting his whole gang back in terms of a coaching staff. It wasn't just, oh, I know the general manager here. I've worked with Jason Light before. I can trust him. A lot of this has to do with the quarterback, Jameis Winston.
Yeah, no one had a gun to Bruce Arians' head. If he didn't want to coach here, he didn't have to.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, to scratch that itch. But I'm sure he could have found another opportunity somewhere else.
Yeah. And I firmly believe that if Jameis Winston can't really step up and become a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, and what I mean by that is not necessarily have to be in, I almost said Hawaii, that was a long time ago, in Orlando. but... You know, if he can just be that guy that has a little bit better than a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio, specifically if he can get those interceptions down to around 10 and then have the touchdown numbers 25 to 35 in that range, I think that he can take the next step and get that second contract from the Buccaneers.
I thought you were about to say something.
I was thinking the same.
Yeah, it's weird. You almost forget that. At times, and again, it's so early. We're not even at the training camp, but there was a lot riding on Jameis this year. Yeah. Like, I know Bruce is here. He's the quarterback whisperer. But there is no guarantee at all that at this time next year, Jameis Winston is going to be a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
It's crazy to think that Josh Freeman, who was the last first-round quarterback taken by the Buccaneers, and there's been a couple, right? There's been Vinny Testaverde and Trent Dilfer and Josh Freeman and now Jameis Winston.
And Vinny Testaverde Jr. Can't forget he was a Buck for a little bit.
For a minute, yeah. Literally a minute.
Like,
yeah.
He came out through like three interceptions. They're like, all right, have a nice night.
Yeah, so
yeah.
He
had
was,
him
what,
on the bus.
Three practices. They were 2 hours each. So that's right. Like, I don't know, 1,000-something
yeah.
minutes. Yeah.
Man, like, congrats. The media got their story out on you. They got their reads, and have a good day. Go home.
Here's your souvenir practice right. jersey. You know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt and go off on a tangent.
That's okay, Mark.
Just popped in my head.
No worries. but, yeah, Josh Freeman was in his fifth-year option year and had a horrible start to that Jets game and was benched 3 games later in favor of Mike Glennon, who started the Cardinals game. And then
Baby
was,
giraffe.
Yeah, and then was cut a week later. It was just crazy to think that scenario played out. I mean, who knows what this fifth-year option will hold? It can't be any worse than that.
No. I don't – I mean
– if it is
– it would.
There have been situations that we thought, oh my God, it can't get any worse, and then it did.
Well, yeah. That's why Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't here, so you don't have to have that will they, won't they each week with Fitzpatrick.
Are you saying Blaine Gabbert isn't going to step in and light the world on fire?
I don't think so, but I was saying to Taylor at practice.
I don't think so either.
Jameis
I was
saying his shoulder and he's going to play a half. He's not going to have 6 touchdowns and just
here's the thing. Blaine
cause
Gabbert,
a revolt.
Blaine Gabbert, from what I've seen in practice, and this is practice.
Not a game.
Talking about practice.
Looks competent. He looks competent. He's not the worst quarterback in the world.
The epitome of capable.
Yes. Yes.
I was saying that
I don't want him to play a down
right.
this year.
But unless they're okay. up by like 30 and there's five
sure.
minutes left.
And in then
game.
Come in and turn the ball and hand it off to Peyton Barber. But,
right.
But
I mentioned to Taylor before that he looks like the quintessential quarterback in the movie that
yes.
you know, whether it's like Sunshine, Remember the Titans, or Keanu Reeves and The Replacements. Hopefully you people listening to this have seen those movies where he's like,
or who was your Blue Mountain
Alex Moran.
That's a little bit different though with Alex Moran.
Yeah, because he's
I
a
say.
Little skinnier.
I haven't seen
he's
that
not
yet.
The blonde hair good looking.
Right. Yeah, I'm talking about like
he's
long
like the
hair,
Thad Castle like of quarterbacks.
Kind of.
Not as
like aggressive and
tough.
Things like that.
That's a tough comparison, but just the visuals. He's got the.
I'm going
the
with Sunshine.
Tall,
Remember the Titans.
Good looking, nice hair. He looks like he's a starting quarterback at your local high school, college.
Right.
Insert here.
Town yeah. hero. Everything yeah. like that.
Have you guys seen Wildcats? Old flick. Goldie Hawn. Wesley Snipes. Woody Harrelson.
Wow.
It's a fantastic
no,
football movie.
R.I.P.
It's the sport of kings. Wait. Better than diamond rings.
Is Goldie Hawn still alive?
Football. Yeah. Still
okay.
alive. Yeah.
Who was the one that died around the same time as Michael Jackson? Farrah Fawcett. I think
is
I
Farrah
got,
dead?
I think so.
I think. Was it Farrah Fawcett?
I think she died right around
yeah,
when Michael
was,
Jackson
like, the,
died.
Is Farrah Fawcett dead?
That
yeah,
year
it was,
Michael Jackson, the guy from the OxyClean. Billy Mays.
Yeah.
The OxyClean, and I believe Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah. Because it all happened
in threes.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Celebrities always die
yeah,
in threes,
yeah,
so we
yeah.
know this.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Goldie Hawn, because you're still alive.
Goldie Hawn, if you're listening,
I don't, sorry. I don't think Goldie's sorry for being
sorry
alive.
Sorry to Goldie Hawn fans out there that are like, no, she's still alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll have to check out that movie. It sounds good.
It is. It's funny. It's a good. It's a comedy. It's a
okay.
It's a good movie.
One Wildcast. Day we'll have to. We won't do it right now because we've gotten all, too
we have,
much
we
off
have
topic.
We have plenty of time to kill this summer.
Yeah.
When there's no
one
football
day we'll
to
have
talk
to
about.
Rank like all the football movies.
Okay.
And, you know, give them a power ranking.
Sure. I like
I
it.
Think that'd be
are we going to start the Mount Rushmore of... We need more than a Mount Rushmore. We
well, I mean, how many football movies are there, really?
No, there really should be, like, top four football
yeah.
movies.
Yeah.
Right. I think
Remember
you could do
Titans,
a Mount Rushmore with
any
that.
Any Given Sunday. Again, I'm just throwing names out there.
Yeah.
Though I think Remember the Titans will...
I kind of like The Last Boy Scout, too. Had a great...
See, I never saw that.
Oh, man.
But you could still, you know, someone yeah. might make the case for, say...
Damon Wayans.
Little Giants.
Another
Willis.
Team
you know,
movie. That was a football movie.
Little Giants?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm excited to cover Ndamukong Suh. I think that even the most ardent Gerald McCoy fan is going to, I don't say forget about Gerald, but just when you see the...
You're not
going to
miss him until years later, and you can look back and be like,
yeah, I mean...
You know, Gerald McCoy, he was a great guy.
I just think that Suh is, he's more akin to what older Buccaneer fans, people my age and generation that grew up watching Warren Sapp. I mean, like, you know, I was 24 years old. I think Warren and I are about the same age. I'm 47. I think he's either 46, 47, 48. We're like about a year apart or maybe the same age. But I remember watching him at University of Miami. The three most dominant defensive tackles I've ever seen in college football are Warren Sapp at Miami, Aaron Donald at Pittsburgh, and Ndamukong Suh at Nebraska. Those three defensive tackles, I can't remember more dominant play at the college level in terms of that. And then, you know, Ndamukong Suh won every single award you could possibly win.
Just a man among boys.
Except the Heisman. I mean, he won the Lombardi, the Bednarik, the Outland Trophy, the Bronco Nagurski Award. He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year.
Probably like
first team All American, yeah. You know, I mean, and the thing is, Gerald McCoy was also in the Big 12, and he got it over McCoy, and then he comes to the NFL, you know, Pro Bowler, All Pro, Rookie of the Year in 2010, and you know, some people look and say, okay, well, you know, he's not the most dominant sacker. Agreed, but he still wrecks a lot of havoc, and I think that part of the reason why he wanted to come and play in this scheme is to play more three technique. And I asked him about that today in the press conference. And he said, you know, he kind of downplayed it a little bit.
He's like, three, yeah. five, yeah, seven, nine, doesn't matter.
I'll play anything, and I can play everything. Yeah. That's the player.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see Todd Bowles move everybody around. I think we've seen that in practice. We've seen Bo Allen play three. We've seen Vita Vea play the three. I don't know if you're going to see Will Golston play the three.
No, I doubt it.
But I think you're going to see Ndamukong Suh play the nose, the 5-6 tech defensive end, and the three as well. But I think that his home base is going to be the three tech.
And that's what you hear every coach, every player say is variability. Variability, and it's going to be fun. I think you're going to have some downs where I think it's going to be a lot less often. You're going to see Ndamukong Suh play the nose tackle and Vita play the three tech.
Yep,
and then
just
you're
going to
see Vita play the nose and then Bo Allen be the three tech. I mean, I don't think that's going to be the least likely of the scenarios.
Yeah.
But you're going to have these guys move all around. You're going to probably see Ndamukong Suh out there at the five tech.
Yeah.
You might see Vita Vea do it a little bit.
Yep. And the other thing is I think you're going to see Ndamukong Suh have more sacks this year than the 4.5
he's
going to
have a lot more freedom.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's going to be a double-digit sacker. I don't think he's going to get 8 or 9 per se. But I think he can get 6, 7 here in this scheme. And really the linebackers though, that's where the sacks are going to come from, you know. But I think you can see Ndamukong Suh, like you said, playing the three, the nose. You might even see Ndamukong Suh at Ford's Garage.
About to transition into it.
I mean,
you
might.
It's one of the places he's got to check out now that he's going to be living in the Tampa Bay area.
Of course. And the best thing about Ford's Garage, aside from their amazing food and burgers, is the fact they've got locations all over the Tampa Bay area. I go to the one in Wesley Chapel. Marco's the one in Brandon. There's one in Citrus. There's one
in Countryside. I've been to the one in Fort Myers.
Exactly, yeah.
So all over the state of Florida.
There's one in Dearborn, Michigan.
There is one in Dearborn, Michigan, exactly.
For all you northern folk listening to the podcast.
If you're driving down I-4, there's one in Kissimmee. There's one in Orlando. St. Petersburg, we've been to the one over there in St. Petersburg. I'm going to see a concert tonight at Janus Landing.
Nice.
I might go to the Ford's Garage right down the street from Janus.
Tonight. Yeah, absolutely.
Who
should.
Knows?
I mean, they got enough craft beer and a whole ton of choices for whatever you like to drink. A nice spot to, you know, pregame before you head on over to the concert, I'd say.
No doubt about it. So Ford's Garage, you can check them out online for their menu, for all the locations. It seems like they're opening up a new one every couple of months. So by the time football season rolls around, I would imagine we're going to have even more locations to talk about. But check them out at FordsGarageUSA.com. And make it a Ford's weekend.
And also make sure to check out our Ford's Garage poll question that we have on PeterReport.com. We have one every single week. This one right now is whether you prefer the move that they made to replace Gerald McCoy with Ndamukong Suh. So, make sure you head on over to PeterReport.com and answer that question.
So we've got you've probably seen the Advent Health banners on PeterReport.com. Advent Health is the official hospital of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, also the namesake of the Advent Health training facility here at One Buccaneer Place. And they're a new advertising partner of ours. And they've got a fantastic promotion for Buccaneer fans, which I think includes every single one of you out there in Pewter Nation. So here's what I want you to do. Click on one of the banners. It's going to take you to a page. Scroll down about halfway, and you'll see this VIP experience, this Bucks VIP experience. All you got to do is put a couple hundred words. It's like just a little bit more than you would tweet out about what makes you a big Buccaneer fan. And you're going to give them some basic information, email address, your name, phone number, things like that, just so they can contact you if you win the big prize. Matt, what's the big prize? I'll tell you what the big prize is.
Thank you.
The big prize is two tickets, club seats, to the season opener against the San Francisco 49ers.
What?
Yep.
Wait, Quan Alexander's going to be there.
Yes, he will.
I want to see that.
Well, you will, but you're going to be in the press box. But if you don't want to miss out on that game, if you want free tickets, you can do that. Advent Health is giving away two club seats to that game. And if it's too hot, get inside, watch the game indoors, from a nice, cool, air-conditioned, tremendously well-furnished club environment. And they're going to give you two pregame passes, so you get the full VIP experience, and you get autographed Bucks memorabilia if you're the lucky winner. So get out there, Buccaneer fans. Click on the Advent Health banners. Do it this weekend. It'll literally take you, I'm going to say, 3 minutes, maybe four if you're a slow typer. Put in a couple hundred words about what makes you the biggest Buccaneer fan. Give them your information. Hit submit. And that will help us out at PeterReport.com because that's what Advent Health is looking for in terms of this advertising promotion. And more importantly, I would love to see one of our PeterReport.com readers and Peter Nation podcast listeners win this prize. So do it today. You could be that Bucks VIP come the season opener.
Now, off of that, there's something I have to backtrack a little bit.
Uh-oh.
A couple weeks back, I said, Ndamukong Suh's a nasty SOB on the field, and he's going to bring an edge to this defense.
Okay.
I also said, I don't know him personally. Did it take you guys aback? Like, he was a lot more soft-spoken and a little I mean, you could kind of see it. Sometimes he'd kind of look down when there was a question that didn't seem like it rubbed him the right way. But he was downright pleasant to us.
Yeah, I mean, he's Hardy Nickerson was kind of that way, too. Hardy was just a complete badass on the field. And he really wasn't that surly in front of the media when the cameras were on. But when the cameras were off, Hardy had like an edge about him.
You could see that. You kind of saw it in the back, like when the gears got turning. When you kind of see, oh, he's about to let something out. But he was very, I mean, for the first interaction with the media, he was, I mean, not soft-spoken, not a ton of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know Bucks fans, don't go out, another nice guy. On the field, he's not going to be that. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't.
There's a lot of energy that he brings to this team, and there's a definite edge he brings to this team.
Yeah.
I'm merely talking about he was just very soft-spoken, talked about his trip to France.
Yeah.
He talked about some of the things he loved.
Well, he's a human being.
I
mean, he's not this Terminator killing machine that some fans think that he is. It's just that he can flip the switch, and some guys can do that. John Lynch, Hardy Nickerson could do that. Warren Sapp. And I love Warren, but Warren Sapp was a moody son of a bitch that, you know, there were some days where it was Wednesday and you go in and Sapp was like holding court with the media, you know, laughing, jovial, whatever. And then other Wednesdays you go in there kind of expecting that from Warren, and he was just a nasty son of a bitch that you didn't want to talk to. He didn't want to talk to you, and you didn't quite know what you were going to get. And I think with Sue, you know, this is kind of who he is. He's kind of a quiet, reserved guy.
Let's just play, do the talking. And I think a lot of people, you know, brought up his past, the stop with Evan Smith. I think now, you know, he's been in the league for a long time. He's learned how to balance being aggressive on the field and also, you know, when to be kind of
a normal guy. I don't think he got a personal foul last year.
And that's what I was going to bring up next is I don't remember who asked the question, but they said he didn't get a personal foul last year and he didn't get many personal foul penalties
the year before.
Clearly the page is turning.
He's becoming a smarter player.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he got that reputation when he was a younger player.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for him, it's kind of stuck with him a little bit.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see when the Buccaneer fans get on board with this guy and when you start hearing the entire Raymond James Stadium say, you know, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, I think that what he did today is for any players that – because you know there are fans that still see him in the Tampa Bay area as that you see it in our comments on PeterReport.com. He's a nasty player. I don't want him on this team. And what I really think that quiet confidence he brought today, you know, Devin White, when he stepped in, he was loud. He was energetic. He had, I wouldn't say
smiling,
I wouldn't
from
say
ear
arrogant,
to ear.
But a little bit of ego there.
Sure.
And he knew it.
Yeah.
And I don't even think Sue brought that kind of energy, but Devin White also doesn't bring the same past that Ndamukong Suh does. And I think what that quiet confidence is going to do is it allows him to become a little more humanized to the Tampa fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to allow them to see a different side of him that he isn't that spit-in-your-face guy all the time. I'm not saying he does, but that kind of aggressiveness on the field, he's not that all the time.
And you don't need everyone to be the same exact player.
That's exactly
You need – not everyone has to be a vocal leader like Jameis.
Right.
Some people are better leading by example, like Sue said in his own press conference.
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, Lavonte David is not – that vocal
he's
guy.
He's more of a lead by example.
Yeah,
he is, people know him as one of the top
guys. He's had to be more of a vocal leader because someone had to fill that vacuum. But
especially when Kwan went out.
Exactly.
Now he's got Devin White to do this.
Exactly. So
if he wants to.
Yeah, well, listen, we appreciate everybody listening to a bonus edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. We did two this week, and we'll do two next week. We'll give you one Tuesday with our opening thoughts of minicamp, which will be completely different from what we've seen in the OTAs. Just kidding. Sarcasm. And then we will wrap up with another bonus edition next week on Thursday, talking about kind of wrapping up the week, what right. we've seen from Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday's practices.
And hopefully you'll be on the show. But
I hope so.
To be seen
exactly.
Or heard.
Yeah, and we'll see if Mark has abided by the new guidelines. I've actually got to write some guidelines, don't I? All right. I have to give him like a list of don't do this anymore. No more excessive interruptions. No more trying to be funny, you know, excessively. I think Mark has got a great personality. I think he's comical.
Absolutely.
I think Mark tells great stories. It's just when it gets too far, when he takes it too far, you know, that's where we have to lay down the law. You know, and it's no different if you're Ndamukong Suh or if you're Mark Cook. If you stomp something to death, you're going to get fined and suspended.
Mark Cook is the Ndamukong Suh of this podcast.
I'd say more Ryan Jensen because, you know, red hair.
Red, exactly. That's a perfect note to end on. So be sure to visit our sponsors. Take advantage of the Advent Health offer that we have on PeterReport.com. Read the SR's Fab 5. Read the stuff from Ndamukong Suh's press conference today. Wonder Twins, you have some content for us for the weekend?
Yeah.
Good answer, Matt.
Got a story in drafts right now.
Good answer.
Hopefully it'll get posted soon. And I'll be working on something with Bruce Arians as well from some of his comments from his post-practice press conference today. So stay
Excellent.
Tuned. We always got something out there for you, including this podcast. So
yep. And
always moving.
And for Taylor Jenkins and Matthew Matera, our producer, and for the suspended Mark Cook, I am Scott Reynolds saying, thank you very much for listening to another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out.
Out.